Starting here, the Gemara, nine lines down on the top of Chav Vav Amud Aleph, we're continuing the Gemara from yesterday, which discussed the issue of sandal. The Gemara's underlying assumption is that a sandal is always paired with a vlad, and therefore there was a proper leida with the vlad, and then why should the sandal make any difference? The Gemara came up with a number of nafkuminot between the sandal and the vlad. Most of them involved some sort of separation in time. And that's where the Gemara continues over here. Amru Abana Kamedra Papa, Umi Itnuhu Lahani Shinuye. All these answers that we gave yesterday, for instance, a woman who's converting and she is non-Jewish when she gives birth to the Vlad, and then she is already converted once she gives birth to the sandal. Is such a case plausible? Vatanya. Shein Yotzin, Ein Yotzin Mele Kruchin. When they exit together. Kruchin means Dvukim Zebazer. They're attached to each other. As Rashi points out, it's not mean Dvukim Mamash. It doesn't mean literally they're enwrapped with each other, but they come out simultaneously. And if that's the case, you're not going to have the gap in time that is required for the answers that we gave. Amra Papash, Mamino. The fact that they are dvukim, that they are somewhat attached together, vlad the sandal al palgei, that's only halfway up. Umishal chifle kalvape reshe, and it slides out towards the head. That means that the vlad only reaches to about the halfway point or the tibur of the sandal, and the head of the vlad covers the sandal. The sandal is a little ahead of the vlad. They're attached together. They are somewhat concurrent in their coming out of the womb, but there's still the sandal that is ahead of the vlad. So gabi bechorot, when it comes to bechorot, the mishnah bechorot gon shiatzu derech hosheim. They came out head first. The sandal kadim vinafik. And therefore, the sandal exited first because it's higher up. It's above the head of the fetus. The fetus's head is in the middle of the sandal. And the fetus's head is covering the sandal, but the sandal has a piece that extends above it. So they're coming out head first. The sandal will exit first, and therefore the fetus that comes out after the sandal will be patur mina bechura. Gavi kritut, shiatzu derech margulotayan. When it comes to the Mishnah and kritot, that's a case where they come out and breach. The vlad kadim, benafik, there the vlad will come out first, because the sandal is all the way up by the head of the fetus. You're exiting feet first in the breach, then the feet of the fetus will exit first and not the sandal. And in that instance, the derech dolphin that's coming out as a C-section is the vlad, and the sandal is coming out derech arechem will be second, and therefore there's you'll have to bring a korban for the sandal. Rav Huna bar tachliva mishmei de Rav Amar afilu tema mitzumtzamim. When we say kruchim here, we mean literally enwrapped together. They come out simultaneously, concurrently. V'ipoch shmaitato. But switch around the way that we're learning here. Gabi bechorot sheyatzu derech margalotehem. When it comes to the bechor, they came out in the breach. Vlad itbach yuta sorech velo nafik. A vlad that has life force in it holds on. It doesn't give so easily. It doesn't come out so fast. Sandal delet bechiyuta. On the other hand, a sandal that doesn't have any life to it, sharik vinafik, it slips out easily. Gabi kretot, when we're talking about the case in kretot, shiatzu derech hosheim, they came out head first. Vlad ibit pechiyuto, when a vlad that has life force in it, midanofik reshe havia leida, when its head exits, that's classified as a leida. Sandal, when it comes to sandal, nafik rube. So the head is only classified as a leida when you're talking about a viable entity. When we're talking about a sandal, the robe of the sandal has to exit. So therefore, in this case, again, the fetus, the vlad, will exit first through the C-section, and the derech arechem will come out the sandal, because it's coming afterwards, because until the rove has exited, it's not classified as a leida, as opposed to the fetus, which is classified as a leida as soon as the head exits. Now Rashi says, because the ein rosh nefel chashuv, that the rosh of a nefel is not considered to be anything chashuv, because it's not a viable entity. Therefore, you have to wait until rov. Now Tosva points out, even though in Masechet Bechorot, Shmuel, who says that by nefelim, that the rosh is not considered chashuv, itotav, there was a strong question against that position, and it undermined his position. Nevertheless, over here, we'll still say by the sandal, that until the rove has exited, it'll be classified as a non-birth, because by a nefel, by a stillborn, the baby has features and facial features and has a human features to it. Therefore, the rosh is still considered chashuv over there. Whereas over here, where you're talking about a sandal, that's talking about something that's already doesn't have so much of a human look to it. Therefore, there you'll need a rove and not the rosh to exit in order to be classified as a leida. So even though we don't say what Rashi says over here, that a nefel is head is not considered chashuv because that's rejected in the Gemara and Bechorot, nevertheless, still by sandal, we will say that, because a sandal is less chashuv than a nefel. A sandal, this flattened out fetus, is considered less like a human or human form than a nefel, than a stillborn. And therefore, Tosavot says over here, when we say vlad it pechiyuta benafik reshe avi leida, a vlad who is alive, once its head exits, it's classified as a leida, but it says that's not literal. That's lav davka. Even if it's not alive, as long as it's something that would have been a viable entity, had it been alive, That's enough, because a nafel will be considered a birth once the head exits of a stillborn that is classified as a birth. Tosafot also brings the girsa of the Rach over here. The girsa of the Rach is Vlad, it be chiyuta, but nafik rube. That when a Vlad that has a life force to it, once the robe is exited, then it's considered a birth. Sandal, it be chiyuta. Sandal that does not have a life force to it, but nafik kule. The entirety has to exit. Now, rove and kule over here is referring, as Tosafot says, to the rosh, to the head. Therefore, if the majority of the rosh exits by a live entity, that's classified as a birth. But by a sandal, we're going to require the entirety of the head to exit in order to be classified as a birth. But of course, nobody would say that you need the entirety of the thing to exit in order to be a birth, because rubo kukulo. And therefore, if the robe of the goof is exited, everybody would agree that that's the case by the sandal, that it's considered a birth. So therefore, it must be done about the whole head versus the robe of the head. So by a live entity, a viable fetus, then it will require the robe of the head to exit in order to be a birth, not the whole head. By a sandal, it will require that the entirety of the head exit in order to be considered a birth. For the next Mishnah, Shilya b'bayit, if we have a placenta or afterbirth in the house, abayit tamei, the house is tamei. Lo shashilya vlad, not because the placenta or this afterbirth is a vlad, ella, shein shilya below vlad. The underlying assumption is that you only have a placenta or an afterbirth when there is a vlad, and that means that a vlad did exit into this house. If a vlad exits into this house, then there's tamei tumat meit. You have a dead fetus in the house that conveys tuma. And therefore, at some point, the house had a Vlad that was discharged inside of it. Shenomer nimol ka Vlad. No, that's not true. The Vlad disintegrated, dissolved. No, ka Vlad actually yatzah before it exited. And therefore, when it exited, it was no longer in the form of a Vlad. And everything here will be tahor. We'll see that on tomorrow's daf, why that's the case. So, Tan Rabbanan. Shelya tchilata dome luchut shel arev. The Shelya, this placenta afterbirth, looks in the beginning like a string of the woof. Besufa doma lekitormos. In the end, it's like a size or shape of a lupine. Or the other way to learn this is that the top of it is like the shape of the string of a woof, and the bottom is like a tormos, like a lupine. Vechalula kichotzeret, it's hollow like a trumpet. Ve'ein shvilya pchuta mitefach. And there's no placenta that's less than a tefach. Shimon Gamliel omer, shvilya dome lekurkoban shel tanagolim. Shvilya is similar to the crop of the hens, of the chickens, that is the area that stores the food before it goes into the gizzard that processes the food. Shadakim yotzim mimeno, that the intestines exit from. So it's a small, ballish type of structure that's narrow at the top, and that's what a placenta afterbirth looks like. Tanya, Rabbi Oshaya, Zi'ira de min chavraya, chamishas shiuran tefach. There are five things that a tefach is the shiur for these items. Ve'elohen, and these are they. Shoya, which is obviously what we just saw here. Shofar, Shidra, Dofen Sukah ve'ezov. Now the Gemara will go through each of them. Shilya Hadamran. That's what we just said here. That there's no placenta after birth unless it's the size of a tefach. Shofar. What's the din of a shofar? The Tanya Kami Hei Shiur Shofar. What's the size, the minimum size of a shofar to blow on Rosh Hashanah? Perish Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Kadei Shiachzenu Biado. If he holds it with his hand, V'yir'e L'kan L'kan. And you can see some of the shofar above his hand and below his hand. And that is, as Rashi explains, that a tefach is four thumbs width worth. You need four thumbs in a row that are up against each other, and that'll make a size of a tefach. When a person holds a shofar, they use the four fingers to hold the shofar. That's less than four thumbs breadth worth, but it's only four fingers breadth. So you need something in excess of that to get to the four thumbs in width. So what do you say? You say you have the four fingers on the shofar, and you can see a little bit above and a little bit below. That'll get you to four thumbs worth of width, and that would be considered or classified as a tefach. And that's what the Gemara is quoting over here, that and that's a tefach. Shidra, when we're talking about a spine, what is this? Mahi, damar v'franach, amar, Rabbi Yochanan, shidro shel lulav. The spine of the lulav, tzirich shei yotzei min hadas tefach, has to exceed the hadas by a tefach. That means, as Rashi defines over here, the spine is where the leaves are still attached together. They have a solid part in the back of the lulav. Once they start, the leaves start to spread out from there, that's no longer considered the spine. So the spine itself must exceed the height of the hadasim by at least a tefach. Tosafot over here quotes from the Gemara in Sukkah, where we have a statement, Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel says that the lulav must exceed the hadasim by a tefach, but over there he doesn't have this requirement of shidra, that it be a spine. And the Gemara never asks from here, from a, what seems to be a braita. So Tosafot gives a number of answers, one of which is that this is not a braita that was by Rabbi Oshayo, Rabbi Chia, and therefore it's not classified as a real braita, or that the shidra, the word shidra, was not included in the braita, but was added by the Gemara to get to that halacha, and that's why this Gemara is not brought as a question on the position of Yehuda Amar Shmuel in the Gemara in Sukkah. Dofen Sukkah, the wall of a Sukkah, That has to do with the Aloha Lamoshe Misinai by Sukkah. The Tanya Shtaim Kilchatam. By a Sukkah, you need two walls that are halachic, meaning seven tvachim of wide walls. And then the third wall can be even a tefach wide. Tefach wide, which is within three tvachim of the post, the frame or the structure of that wall. That'll give you equivalent of four tvachim when you use lavud. Lavud is the principle that's a base that is less than three tvachim is considered as if it's not there. Therefore, if you have a wall that is a tefach, then in addition to those three tvachim, together make up four tvachim. That's the rove of a wall. And Aloha Moshe Misinai is that that's sufficient. That you need two whole walls and then a third wall that is one tefach, including the three, less than three tefachim space, together that will make up the rove of a wall that you need on the third side. The last thing is, ezov. The Tani Rav Chiya, ezov, tefach. The ezov that you need for paraduma, for the tzorat, for all the sprinklings that are done by ezov, they have to be a tefach long. Samar Rav Chanina bar Papa, Dorish, Shila, Ishkvar Tamarta, Tlat Matnita, three of these are brightot, Vetarte Shmaitoto, Shira Tefach. When it comes to this, three of these are Tanaic works, and two of them are Moraic sayings, that require this tefach. Out of the five that we listed here, three of them are Tanaic, two of them are Amoraic. So the Gemara says, Tarti, there are really two Amoraic statements here. Chali, there's only one Amoraic statement here. Samar Baye, Ema, don't say in this last case, by the Ezov, that Tani Rabbi Chiya, Ella, Amar Rabbi Chiya, that Rabbi Chiya says it, not Tani, that he had said from a Breita. Amar Rabbi Chiya, Ezov, Tefach. And that's what Rashi points out over here, that Rabbi Chiya is really on the Kava Tefer. He is on the line between Tanaim and Amoraim, and therefore sometimes he manifests himself as a Tana, sometimes he manifests himself like an Amora, similar to what we see in Rav, in the Shas of Rav Tanu Upolik. The difference that Rashi makes over here is that when Rav Chiya says Tano, or Tani, then he's quoting a Braita, a Tanaic work, and it's classified as a Tano. Whereas when Rav Chiya just says something, Amar Rav Chiya, then he's speaking of his own accord, and then he's classified as an Amora. So over here, that'll be the case, that if we switch it to Amar Rav Chiya, now you have two Memrot from Amoraim, and three Memrot that are Tanaic in nature. Rav says, V'tuleka. There are no other cases in Shas where he'd require a Tefach, a minimum shear of Tefach, Vayika. Tefach al Tefach al Rom Tefach, Merubam. When it comes to Tumat Ha'Ohel, Tumat Ha'Ohel, there is a din that if you have a cubic Tefach, that is classified as an Ohel. And that has Nafkamino, made V, et the Tumah, V'chotzeis v'nei Tumah. If you have a cubic, squared, tefach, I mean a tefach by a tefach by a tefach, then, number one, it's meviat tumah, anything under that covering of that ohel is tameh. Chotzeitz v'fnei tumah means that anything that's beyond that covering of the ohel will not be tameh because the ohel protects it. And that's a shear of tefach. It says tefach kaminan, tefach al tefach lo kaminan. We're talking about simply a tefach, we're not talking about tefach squared or tefach cubed, that's a different category. Va'ika, we have another case. Evin ayotzei min ha'tanur. You have a protrusion out of the tanur, out of the oven, tefach, and it comes out of tefach. Umin akirah shalosh etzbot. If it's coming out of a kirah, the stove, then it's three fingers wide. Chibur, that is considered to be attached to the tanur or the kirah. The Rashi over here says the difference between a tanur and a kirah is that a tanur has a place to place two pots on the top of the stove, and a kirah has a place for one pot on the stove, which, according to the Mishnah in Shabbat and Perek HaKirah, is incorrect, and Tosafot in the second Amud points this out, that what Rashi says here is incorrect. A tanur is an oven. It cooks internally, and it has an entrance or a point to put in from the side. A kirah is like a stovetop, and you put the pots on top of those stovetops. A kirah has a place for two pots to sit there, and then in the Mishnah Shabbat, it talks about a kofach, which has a place for one pot to be sat there. So a kofach is a smaller form of a kirah, but the differentiation between two and one that Rashi makes here between tanur and kirah seems incorrect based on that Mishnah in Shabbat. But over here, we're talking about tuma. The oven, or this kirah, is made out of kli cheres, is made out of pottery, earthenware. And earthenware is mekabel tuma internally, only mitocho, but not migobo from the outside. But if a kli cheres becomes tameh already on the inside, it's able to project the tuma out, or convey the tuma even from the outside or from the back of it. Now, included in that, and this is, again, dinim in tuma, is something called a yad. A yad, which is an extension of the item that is used to carry the item, to move the item, or functional with the item. That yad has the same din as gabo, as the backside of the kli cheres. Therefore, if there's some reason the tanur became tamei on the inside, not only is the tanur tamei on the inside and can convey tuma on the outside, but even a yad, a projectile that's coming out of the tanur, will also convey that tuma if it's classified as a yad. Here, the Mishnah says that up to a tefach away from the tanur is considered to be a yad, an extension, a functional extension of the tanur, and it will convey tuma. And the same is true by kira up to shlosh etzbot. But here you see the shir of tefach. It says, when we bring in shirim of tefach, is with less than a tefach, is not kosher. Above a tefach becomes kosher, it has relevance. Over here, it's just the opposite. The tefach is the maximum shear. Up to a tefach is considered to be a functional extension of the tanur. Less than a tefach, of course, would be an extension of the tanur. More than a tefach is what becomes a problem. So it's the opposite usage of tefach here. Generally, a tefach is the minimum shear. Over here, it becomes the maximum shear, and that's why we're not speaking about it. Mar says, Vaika tanurei banot. Don't we have the toy ovens of the girls that are a tefach? The tanya, we have a braita. Tanur, tchilato arba'a. A tanur, in the beginning, it has to be four tefachim. In order to be classified as a tanur and be kabel tumah, it has to be a minimum of four tefachim. Vishiyarav, and the leftovers of a larger tanur, has to have at least four tefachim in order to be classified as a kli still, dibei Rabbi Meir. Chamim amrim, bamed, vayim amrim, begadol. That's only talking about a big tanur. Then you need a remainder, a residual of four tefachim. Aval bekatan, when you're talking about small ovens, tchilato kosho. Even the smallest amount will be classified, if you started out, even the smallest amount will be classified as a tanur. Mishetigmar melachto. As long as it's completed. I mean, the process of making this tanur is completed, and it's a functional tanur. As small as it is, it will be mekabel tumah. Vishirav, and the remainders are birubo. That is, if you have a robe, then it would be considered or classified as being tameh. We'll speak about that in 1 second. But kama koshu, what's the koshu that we're speaking about over here when we say that the minimum shear, according to the chachamim, of a tanur to start out is a koshu? Amarabi yanai tefach, that's a tefach. Tosafot points out over here, and the Rabbi Deinu Tam says that sometimes a koshu is bigger than a tefach, sometimes a koshu is less than a tefach. It's not that the Gemara is defining everywhere in Shas that koshu means a tefach, it just means in this instance. Why? Because we have these ovens of the girls, these toy ovens that they make a tefach size. So that does become a kli, because there are things that are made in that way, or of that size. Now, as far as vishiru birubo, the remainder is a robe, everybody agrees that if you make a tanur that's a tefach in size, the robe that's left over is not going to be cast as a kli, because less than a tefach is definitely not a kli. So the Gemara in Chulin says that sheyirav birubo means a bigger tanur. According to the Chachamim, it says a bigger tanur has a remainder of a robe. But we just saw before that Rabbi Meir says that the remainder of a tanur has to be four tefachim. So the Gemara there says, habetet habezayin. That's what that one that's the size of nine tefachim, that's the one the size of seven tefachim. Rashi over here and Rashi and Chulin disagree about exactly what that means. Rashi and Chulin says it's the lesser of the two. It's the lesser of rov or four tefachim. So that means if you have a nine tefach big tanur, then you'd only need four tefachim to still be considered a kli. If you have a seven tefach tanur, then the rov would be less than four tefachim. That would be fine because it's the lesser of four tefachim or the rov. That's why Rashi explains it in Chulin. Rashi over here explains it just the opposite. That when we say that it has to be rov or four tefachim, that means that it has to be the greater of those two. It either has to be rov or four tefachim. So that would mean by a zayin, when you're talking about a seven tefach size tanur, then you'd need at least four tefachim. Whereas when you're speaking about a tet tefachim, a big tanur, a nine tefach tanur, then you would need the rov, which would be the greater of the two, and that would be above four tefachim. So that's the way Rashi explains it here, and Rashi explains it in Chulin. Tosafot, in discussing that, says that he doesn't like Rashi's pshat in Chulin, because Rabbeinu Tam has a problem then. Because it's going to turn out that Sofo will have a smaller requirement than Tchilato. We're going to say by Gadol, Tchilato is Dalet Tvachim, is four Tvachim. And then you're going to say later on that, oh, if it's a Zayin Tefach Tanur, you only need Rov, and that's less than four Tvachim. That means that to start out a Tanur, you need a minimum of four Tvachim. Residual, you can have even less than four Tvachim. But why is that? If four Tvachim is the minimum shiur to make it Chashuv, then even in residual, four Tvachim should be the shiur. And so therefore, Tosfot rejects Rashi's explanation of Chulin, and says the explanation here is better. But then, Tosfot says, I don't understand why you use nine over here. The nine tefachim is shayach when you're talking about Rashi in Chulin. Because then what he's proving to you is that it's the lesser of the four of the rov. So even though by a nine tefach, tanur, where four tefachim is the minimum, it's not even the rov anymore, nevertheless, that's classified as a residual. So that makes sense to use nine. But over here, when you're saying it's the greater of rov or four tefachim, why is it relevant to mention nine tefachim as the size of tanur? You could even use an eight tefach tanur. Because if it's the greater of the two, then the greater of rov or four tefachim, that'll also be above four tefachim. So Tosva then goes back to Rashi's pshat in Chulin and says, Rashi's right in Chulin, what about the Rabbeinu Tam's kasho? He says, that's the case. Because when we start out with things, you always want to make them chashuv, a kli that is chashuv. When you build something and you start something out, you will only do it and only make it into a kli if it's valuable and it's functional and it's a minimum size. Once something is already in function and then it breaks or something happens to it, you will try as best as possible to salvage that which is there. And therefore, it might be that the residuals are smaller than the shirim to start out. Based on that, he says that Rashi's explanation in Chulin might be a better explanation that when we're talking about here for the Chachamim, about Rubo, it means that it's the lesser of Rov or four Tvachim when we're talking about large ovens. Anyway, back to our Gemara over here. Now here we said that the minimum shear for a small tanur is a tefach. So here again, we have something that's mentioned in Tvachim, and it's a tefach, so why isn't that included in our list? Where it says, because plukto lo komairi, there it's a machlok between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim, we're not dealing with things that are a machloket. Even though by dofen sukkah, by the wall of a sukkah, is also machloket, whether you need two walls and then a tefach, or three walls and then a tefach. Tosafot says that's not a problem, because both of them only require that the last wall be a tefach. It's just a question of which one's the last wall. Is it the third wall or the fourth wall? So the Gemara says, Ashdati dehochi. If that's the answer here, then ha nami pluktai. Then you can say the same thing by tanur, about the yad, the extension, the projectile that comes out of the tanur, that it has to have a minimum shear of tefach. Before we said, well, it's different than the tefach we're speaking about, because there it's a maximum shear, not a minimum shear. You could also answer that the Dani Seifam Rabbi Yehuda lo amru tefach lamin at tanur la kotel. That shear of tefach is only between the oven and the wall. Because if it's greater than a tefach, it'll distance the tanur from the wall, and you're going to cut it off. So it's not functional anymore, you're going to cut it off, because you want to make it adjacent to the wall, or put it as close as possible to the wall. But if it's on the other side, away from the wall, it could be even bigger. So there again, you have a machloket about that shiur, and that's why it was not included in this list. Vayika misgeret tofach. What about when it, by the Aron in the Torah, it mentions that the misgeret is a tofach saviv. So it tells you that's a tefach. So that misgeret, that crown, or that decorative piece around the Aron is a tefach. So why doesn't that mention in the list here? Maksar says, Mikdivan lokom bari, something that's written explicitly in the Torah we're not dealing with. Vayika kapore tefach. What about the fact that the kapore, the cover of the Aron, was a tefach thick? That we don't have from the Torah. That's something that we understand from the Gemara in Shabbat, tells us that that's the case, that it was a tefach. It says, Bekochim lokom bari, we're not dealing with things in Kodesh. Vayika dayalikorashi rachva tefach. Alright, so you want to deal with the Rabbanans that are not Kodeshim. I have a case like that by Mavui. By Mavui, in order to carry in a Mavui, you need a lechi and a korah. That lechi, that boar that you put up as a siman at the end of the Mavui, has to be at least a tefach wide. So that tefach is a din in the Rabbanon. That is not in Kodashim. Where it says, b'drabonon lo kamayr. We're not dealing with dinei drabonon. Well, then what's left? Ela b'chtivan lo v'mayr farshi shirayu. What we're dealing with here are things in the Torah that are explicitly written in the Torah, but they have no shiurim in the Torah. So it's something that's written without a shiur in the Torah. Obviously, we're still not dealing in Kodashim. So all those items that are mentioned, these five items, are a tefach. This item have a minimum shiur min Torah. We don't know what the minimum shiur is. Chamin explained that that is a tefach, and those are the items that are in this group. Tosafot says earlier on that we have a lot of other examples. Gemara brought a couple of questions. There are tons of other examples of tefach. He says in the end, this answer will answer all of them, which is, we're looking for this particular type of case where there is a understanding that there should be a minimum shiur min Torah. We just don't know what that shiur is. And that's what's explained in these five memorot that they are a tefach. Okay, now we move on to another sugya. Yativ Rav Yitzchak bar Shmuel bar Marta kamei de Rav Kahana. Yativ kamar, and he was saying, Amar Rav Yudam Rav. Kol shlosha yamim arishonim tolim et ashliya bevlad. This afterbirth of this placenta, if within for the first 3 days after a birth it comes out, we assume it belonged to that vlad. It was connected to that vlad, that fetus that was born. If it's expelled after that time of the 3 days, then we assume that it might be connected with a different vlad and not with the original fetus that was born. Rav Kahana responded to him and said, wait a minute, did Rav really say this? V'amar Rav. I have a member from Rav that says, Eina vlad me'akev achar chaveru klom, that it come out simultaneously. The shilya, the placenta, doesn't wait 3 days. It comes out together with the vlad. Ishtik. He had nothing to say. Rav Yitzchak bar Shmuel had no response to this. Samarlei. So Rav Kahana piped up and said, maybe Dilma kan b'nefil kan b'ben kayamo. Maybe the difference in these two members and Rav have to do with what type of discharge we're talking about over here. Are we talking about a nefil? Or are we talking about a vlad? A vlad is a full-fledged, viable fetus. So the difference will be, by Nephilim, by a fetus that is not viable, that Nephil, when you have a miscarriage or a stillborn, in that instance, there is a possibility that the other Vlad would take time to come out, because what came out was not a viable fetus, and therefore, what's left behind might not have come out together with it. And therefore, we have this framework of 3 days. If it comes in within the first 3 days, we assume it's attached to that Nephil. If it comes out after 3 days, then we assume that it was not attached to that Nephil. On the other hand, when we talk about what Rav said, that if you have two vladot inside, they come out simultaneously, that's only when you're talking about a vlad kayomo. We're talking about a viable fetus that exited because it was viable. So then the other would have come out with it. We assume that any shilya, no matter how much time afterwards, is connected to the original vlad that came out. Because if there was a second vlad, it would have exited right away. They would have exited together. The fact that it didn't exit together is the evidence that whatever shilya came later is connected to this first vlad. And that means by a bar kayomo, When you have a viable fetus, then it doesn't matter when the afterbirth comes out, no matter how long afterwards, that's classified as being connected to it. On the other hand, by a nafel, the 3-day limit will apply to a nafel when the shilyak comes out. So he says, Beferush, he says to back to him, Amalei, Atamar, the Shmaita, the Rav. So this can be read either positively or negatively. Wow. You inferred this, you deduced this from this statement of Rav? Beferush, Amar Rav Achi. Rav actually said that explicitly. That's one way to read it. Or, in the negative form is, Atamar the Shemaita did Rav, you think you came up with this distinction? Beferish Rav Achi, Rav already said that. That's the distinction that he made. He pila nefel, v'achakach he pila shiliyah. If there was a miscarriage or a discharge of a nefel, a non-viable fetus, a stillborn, and then he pila shiliyah, and then afterwards came out an afterbirth or a placenta, klosh shloshi yamim tolinet shiliyah b'vlad. For the first 3 days after that discharge, we connect the placenta to the original vlad. From that point onward, maybe there was another fetus inside and the shiliyah is connected to it. Yalda, if she gave birth to a viable fetus, even up to 10 days later, then we don't worry about another vlad. We say it's connected to this live birth that took place, this live viable birth that took place earlier. Tosavot points out on tomorrow's daf that we have even a shiliyah that's 3 months later. That's what it says. It's a very important principle in Tosavot. That's not a common thing. Unless we see it, and we have evidence of it, we're not going to be sumech on that. With the realm of being tole is in the realm of possibility or things that are normal to happen. What we're not going to do is talk about extraordinary situations or extraordinary cases and say, oh, it's a possibility that the shiliyah will come out 3 months later. And that's why the limit over here by a viable fetus being born is 10 days, not like the 3 months that are mentioned in tomorrow's daf. Shmuel, b'tamidei d'rav, Rav Yehuda v'yotvi. Shmuel and the Talmidim of Rav and Rav Yehuda, amongst those Talmidim of Rav, were sitting in front of Shmuel. Rav had passed away, and then Rav Yehuda moved over to learn by Shmuel. And that's why we have many times, Amar Yehuda, Amar Rav, and Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, because he learned by both of them. Va'azel Rav Yosef Breder Menashe Ayah Mitvil. This individual, this Amor Rav Yosef Breder Menashe from Tvil, passed by them. Ba'ali V'ate, he was going in a hurry, in a haste, he was passing them. Amar Ati Lan Gavra, der Aminan Lei Begila Dechidata. Shmuel said, this is the type of person that we can knock over with a piece of straw, or like a piece of straw. Mrameyu medache. You ask him a question, he's knocked out, doesn't have any answers for you. Arochi ato. Rav Yosef shows up. Amalei Shmuel, my Amar Rav b'shilya. Tell me something over that Rav said by Shilya. Amalei Ochi Amar Rav. This is what Rav said. Ein tolinet shilya, but davar shel kayama. You can only connect the shilya to something that would have been viable. Now, not literally that it has to be viable, but it has to have the possibility of being viable. So even a stillborn or an nafel that is born, had it in its form or in this shape would have been viable had it made it successfully, then you can connect the shiliyah to it. On the other hand, if you have something that's not viable, we'll see in a second what those are. For instance, a behema, chayin, and oaf that aren't viable entities, over there you cannot connect the shiliyah or assume the shiliyah is connected to them. Shalinu Shmo the Chol Tamidi the Rav. Shmo then asks all the other Tamidim and Rav, Armelei Ochi. They all said the same thing, that Rav did say this. Hadachazi the Rav Yehuda Bishut. He looked disapprovingly and in an angry way at Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda is a Talmid of Rav, and come over to Shmuel, and Shmuel was upset that Rav Yehuda didn't tell him this information. We had the other memrot from Rav Yehuda and Rav about Klos Shloshayimim Rishonim. And in addition to that, we had the memra from Rav about Ein Avlad Mitakev Achercheveu Klum. Yet, this memra was not brought from Rav. And so Shmuel was upset that Rabbi Yehuda hadn't told him this memra of Rav. So Bayiminei, Rabbi Yossi ben Shul mi Rabbi. So Rabbi Yossi ben Shul asked Rabbi, I'm a pellet dmut orev. Someone who discharges a shape or something looks like an orev, like a raven. Then, shilya mahu. The placenta that comes out afterwards, what's the din? Amalei, ain't told him el devar sheish bino shilya. You only can be told on something that normally has a placenta or normally has an afterbirth. That's not true by an oaf. Kishu abo. What happens if the placenta is tied to this bird or bird-looking object? Then what's the din there? Amalei, devar sheino shalta. That never happens. It's impossible. So that's not a question. Etave, is that really true? We have a bright dama pellet min beima chayav oaf. Vishilya mehem. If a woman discharges or miscarries something that looks like a behema chayav oaf, v'shilya mehem, and there's a placenta that exits with them, v'zman sh'shilya k'shura mehem, if the shilya is connected to them, ein choshishlim levlad acher, then we don't worry about another vlad, we assume the shilya is connected to this behema chayav oaf. Ein shilya k'shura mehem, on the other hand, if the shilya is not connected to them, choshishlim levlad acher, we do worry about another vlad. V'reini matil aleyem chomer shnei vladot. And I assume I put on them the possibility of two births taking place here, the chumra of two births taking place over here. So Rashi explains that according to Rabbi Meir, that means that I'm choshish for a zachar and a nekeva. Since a chaya, behema, and oaf are a full-fledged birth, the only question is here, we don't know if we have a zachar or a nekeva. So the shilya, we don't know which gender it is. And therefore, if the behema chayof were zacharim, then we also choshish for nekeva, and you'll get yemei tumah and Nekevan Yemei Toar Ovei Zachar. On the other hand, according to the Chachamim, who say Behema Chayof is not a Leida, then the Shilya is a Safek Leida, Safek no Leida. Therefore, you'll give them the Yemei Tumah, the 2 weeks of Yemei Tumah Venekevah, but no Yemei Toar. And Tosafot gives a similar explanation that it's talking in the Divrei Rabbanon, that over here we're speaking about a case of whether it is a Vlad or not, and therefore she'll get the Yemei Tumah and nothing more than that. And the Braita specifically mentioned over here, Behema Chayof, because we just saw before, if you have a Nefel, you have a baby that is born, either a stillborn or a non-viable fetus that's born, but it's human-like in its qualities. Over there, we are told that the shoya in it for the next 3 days. Over here, where it doesn't say that, it's because it's a behema, chaya, and of. So why do we say that there are two different entities here when they don't come out together? Sheni omer. Shemini moach shafir shel shoya. Maybe the sac that was connected to the placenta that had the fetus in it, that was collected to that placenta, dissolved. Vini moach. On the other hand, shoya shel shafir. And the discharge that we have here, this behema, chaya, and of that came out, it also had a placenta, but that placenta dissolved. So I'm missing the other half of each of these two items. They're not a single entity of a shilya and a birth, but rather we have a birth whose shilya was lost, and we have a shilya whose birth or vlad was lost. And because of that, I now have a safek tuma. Gemara says, yufta. It's a very strong question that undermines this point of Rabbi that davar she'eino shalta. You said something that never happens. We see from the Braita that it does happen, and therefore that Rebbe is proved wrong by this Braita. So it's interesting that, I don't know how many times in the Gemara, we have this term tiyufta used against Rabbi. Okay, we'll stop over here and we'll continue with this tomorrow.